Tegan, good afternoon.
Noon, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, welcome to 94.7 The Pulse in Geelong. It's lovely to have you with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Now, I should probably start by just letting people, listeners, know a little bit about you. You're a fiction writer, a teacher and a critic.
Yep.
And you're the author of three novels,
yep.
Bombora, What Falls Away and Safety, as well as several books for children and teenagers. And your collection of short stories, which I'd like to speak to you particularly about today, Six Bedrooms, I think, was published in July this year by Random House.
That's exactly right.
And also, you work as a lecturer in English at Charles Sturt University.
Yes, I'm quite busy.
And you live in the Blue Mountains.
In the middle of marking a bunch of exams.
Of course. Now, look, we've just been listening to Swan Lake leading into the interview. I don't know that it's quite the apt music for Six Bedrooms. It doesn't quite strike that sort of tone somehow.
No, you're probably looking at some kind of 80s special, maybe some Culture Club might have been.
Oh, okay. Can you suggest something in particular?
There's quite a number of songs actually mentioned in the text itself.
Yes.
And I guess one of my favourites of them would be a Eurythmics song, something like Sweet Dreams.
Now, short stories, I think, are one of my favourite genres. And I'm also always very curious about how a collection of short stories comes about. Now, some of the stories in Six Bedrooms have been published before, and there are certainly connecting themes. Your character, Tasha, is common to many of the stories.
Yeah, that's right. She turns up in four of them. Yeah.
So how does this sort of collection come about? I mean, are there stories that you've written that didn't quite fit in with this collection, or how do you construct a collection like this? I presume you don't set out sort of way ahead and say, I'm going to publish a collection of short stories under this title?
No, that's absolutely correct. There's not a great deal of planning that goes into it. And in fact, while writing the collection, I was learning the form as well, because I'd never really written short stories before. So I was really trying to teach myself to write short stories. And I found myself writing in the first person for the first time ever. And for some reason, when I wrote in the first person, I seemed to need to talk about teenage experience.
Yes.
So after I'd written two or three of the stories, I started to see that I was actually writing towards a theme without having intended it. And with the character of Tasha, I liked her so much, and I found that she was such a great mouthpiece for things that I wanted to describe about my own life and my own feelings, that I would think of an idea for a story, I would start to write into it, and then I'd start to think, oh, this actually fits in Tasha's timeline.
Yes.
And then I would kind of manipulate the facts in order to fit with her life.
Okay.
It was really fun.
So you say that, you know, there was a sort of a theme. Is it fair to ask you to sum up the theme of Six Bedrooms in one sentence?
Horribly unfair, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
I think it's about adolescence and about sexuality and about growing up.
Yes, it's certainly about adolescents trying to find their way in the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Particularly Tasha. But I sort of wonder, is the voice an adolescent voice, or is it the voice of an adult sort of looking back on adolescence with perhaps a little bit more adult wisdom?
Yeah, that's a question I've been asked before, and I think it's a good one. It is definitely meant to be, it's a kind of writer's sleight of hand.
Mm.
It's an adolescent voice, but there's no question that each of them is speaking from a position of wisdom looking back. So they're sort of doing a double thing where they're speaking as themselves, but they do have a weight of experience behind them at the same time.
And it's probably much more interesting for the reader to have that sort of wisdom underpinning it, isn't it? To sort of have something to compare it with.
It's really interesting material. Because when you talk to people about it, a lot of people have stuff from their adolescence that they really would rather not look at.
Mm.
Because it's a time when you're all impulse and no thought, so you behave in ways that later on make you feel ashamed or worried or whatever it might be.
Yes.
So it takes some effort and even courage, I might say, to come to terms with your adolescent self.
Mm.
And that was really what I was trying to do while writing the book.
It is sort of in the wider sense about how families connect or don't connect too, isn't it? James, I think, Tasha's brother, sort of comes into some of the stories, and particularly I think one of those last stories, Together Alone, I thought was a very moving story, bringing him into it and the sort of relationship between the brother and sister.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really pleased that you like that one because it's actually my favourite as well.
I think it's mine too.
I think I knew a couple of things along the way that Tasha, as you know from reading the book, has a difficult relationship with her mother.
Mm.
But it's not a terrible relationship, it's just a tricky one.
Yes.
Her mother's a heavy drinker and the two of them have been left alone at home because the father has gone and the brother has left as well. So I had a terrible thing happening while I was writing the book, which is that my own mother was dying, who was really different from that mother character, but who was really important to me because she was my mother. And I realised as it was happening that Tasha would need her mother to die in order to grow into a new self.
Mm.
And that inevitably brought to question, because of course when somebody dies, family closes in. And I realised that Tasha's brother had been gone for so long that it might be really difficult to get him to engage with those last days.
Yes.
And of course it turns out to be true.
Yes. You say that the connection between Tasha and her mother is tricky. It certainly is, but I thought it was, when it counted, the mother really delivered the goods, didn't she? I mean, in her own way, you could see that underneath she really had a strong bond with Tasha, and when Tasha really needed her, she was really there for her.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear you say that, because I think that's true as well. I don't think she would win any mother awards because she's often drinking and a bit absent when Tasha needs her, but they speak each other's language really, and it's really important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it sustains Tasha.
Yes. Now, as well as the stories, I'd like to sort of ask you something about the style too, which I thought it's been described in some reviews as certainly being very pared back and very simple. I think it is. Something I sort of noticed in it too, it seems to me like it's quite a fragmented, discontinuous sort of narrative. It seems like occasionally that narrative expectations are suddenly interrupted, but, you know, just when you expect the story to continue in a straight line, but it's picked up again later on.
Yeah.
What's happening in this sort of narration?
Yeah, I really tried to, after long years of writing and thinking about it, I really tried to only work on an idea for as long as it keeps me interested. So I try not to write past that point where I'm just sort of writing filler stuff, you know, kind of explaining what happened then and what happened then and what happened then. So I was trying really hard to be sensitive, in a sense, to the way a character thinks as well, because the way you think is discontinuous.
That's
so you re-experience in a discontinuous way.
Mm.
And I guess that's what the stories kind of imitate. So you might be thinking about a party that happened in the past. I know that the opening story, Like a Virgin, has quite a complex sort of time scheme. It goes back and forward.
Mm.
But what I was really doing there was I was almost just following a scent. It wasn't deliberate. I just went where the story told me to and where the thinking about that party told me to go. So it's a sort of... Yeah, it's an instinctive following of a kind of unconscious narrative. It's not too complicated a way to explain it.
What then are you trying to achieve, I suppose, in a short story? I mean, it's a particular sort of genre, isn't it? What's a good short story, or, you know, what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah. Well, the short story writer I read more than anybody else is Alice Munro, the Canadian writer, and I guess what I think a good short story is the ones that she writes, because what each of her stories do is go to a place that's really rarely illuminated in fiction. I often find that the torch in fiction is shone into caves that have had torches shone into them before, so you're revisiting the same stuff over and over again, maybe with different voices, different characters. But Alice Munro always surprises you by examining something very intimate that you might have thought was trivial about a character's story.
Yes.
And for me, it's only the short story that can do that, because the novel is concerned always with a larger theme and a larger narrative that always has to move forward. Interesting.
Yes. Is that sort of something to do with what I sort of see too as describe a sort of sudden insights in the story? For example, on page 60, there's an insight that sort of made me sort of jump a bit when, I think it's Tasha, comes out of the cinema and she says, "When we come out into the light, my father had died, though the city and I did not know that yet."
Yeah.
And then on the other page, On the page 61, there's another line that says, "My mother and I looked at each other. I had a moment to claim the role as chief mourner in her household. She was only an ex-wife and I was still a daughter." These sort of, I don't know, these sort of existential little insights. Is that sort of connected with what you were saying before?
Yeah, yeah, it does. And there's another one that's similar that always comes back to me when I think of this moment in writing, which is, it is in a Tasha story. It's the same story, actually. It's in Firebugs, when Tasha is sitting in the gutter with her brother when she's a little girl. She's remembering, and they're putting various things into a fire, and she puts in a jacaranda flower, and it sort of gives out this kind of sweet smoke. Now, all of those are entirely, they come unbidden. So the bit where she steps out of the cinema and her father is dead, that just occurred to me as I was writing. I didn't know what the story was going
to
be about.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, really, was, is this something accidental? It's not deliberate, then.
Yeah, and I've learned to recognise the good accident.
Yeah.
When I come across a good accident, I follow it to see what will happen next.
So what are the bad accidents?
Well, you can't see them. They're not there, I hope.
Just as well.
Sometimes you get better and better.
Yes.
Your instincts get honed. But
yes,
in the first few, the story I'm also really proud of, Jem Rose, that took a lot of rewriting because I started a lot of hairs that turned out to go nowhere.
Yes, yeah.
I had to sort of turn back, basically.
So it suits Tasha, really, because she's such an aware, finely tuned sort of individual, isn't she? All her antenna are sort of out there all the time.
Yes.
Noticing everything and everyone.
That's right, and yet it doesn't stop her from doing
silly things,
stupid
no,
things.
No, no. Talking about the story structure and that too, I've read you write for The Australian too, and
yeah.
I think you said somewhere there that you see the conclusion of a story as needing to be some sort of a summary of the whole story. Is that?
Yeah, yeah.
Think? How does that work?
Although I'd have to sort of say that as lightly as possible. So I don't mean that the ending of a story has to say, and this is what I was writing about, thank you very much, off we go. But it needs, as far as I'm concerned, to contain an echo of what the story is about. So it might be a subtle echo, it might not be fully articulated. But to me, an ending always, a good ending, always says somewhere inside it, this is what the story was about. The ending is the final clue, I think.
So can you say a bit more about the echo? What do you actually mean by the echo?
And again, I'm a big one for looking around in the writers that I love to see what they do. When I'm looking for beginnings, I often look in the work of the critic James Wood, because he always begins things so bravely and openly. He steps forward. It's like stepping out into traffic. He's really gutsy.
Yeah.
And for endings, I look at Alice Munro, because her endings look a little bit like somebody just kind of dropping off a cliff, but they never are. They always tell you something like exactly what the character was thinking throughout, or exactly what might happen next, exactly the trajectory of the narrative. So I do a lot of kind of consulting
yes, yeah.
as I write to see what other people have done.
Sure, sure. Now, last year, I think it was in February, you wrote a piece for The Australian, which sort of probably takes a different point of view to what most people say about the teaching of creative writing. Mm. A lot of people commentators say that creative writing can't be taught, but I think you took the view that creative writing can be taught under certain circumstances. Is that?
Yeah, I really think it can. I don't think talent can be taught, and I don't think anybody can really help somebody finish a book or help somebody write a book in a way. But there's something about, one of the things that I really noticed when I was teaching creative writing, which I did for 18 years, I think, was that there's something about the collective will, there's something about all being together in the classroom and needing to write that actually enables writing. And even though that might sound like a light thing, actually getting people to write is hugely difficult.
Yes.
But then to actually work alongside an expert who can look at the mistakes that you're making as you write, who can look at kind of sloppy dialogue or work that's not following its proper instinct. I think of myself as a good teacher who's able to recognise what a student's intention is before they can recognise it themselves. So that's how I try to teach, not by saying all stories have to be like this one,
yes,
but your stories want to be like this, and this is what I think you should do to find that.
So there's a lot of standing back and sort of allowing, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just fun as well.
Yes,
fun.
Yes.
Young people are fun.
Tegan, that's been terrific to talk to you today to sort of gain new insights, particularly into six bedrooms. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks so much. I mean, these are great questions. It's lovely to talk about it.
Oh, thank you. And we look forward very much to your future work.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.